Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. This is your opportunity to pick up the phone, give us a call, ask that question that's been keeping you up at night. Or you've been hearing, maybe you've heard other shows on the radio and they've mentioned something that really doesn't make sense to you, or maybe it's a little confusing. Pick up the phone, call us. We'll give you an answer. 503-417-9595, toll free 877-733-1011. So pick up the phone, give us a call, because I'll tell you, the hour goes, this is probably the fastest hour on radio. It is going to go very fast, and we don't take a lot of breaks, and we go right through and try to answer your questions. And guys, I got to tell you, the markets have been kind of rocky with everything going on. And I want to say right out here first that all of our thoughts and prayers are with all the people in Florida, possibly Louisiana, Georgia. The Southeast is going to get hit hard. And our thoughts and prayers are with those people for their safety. And hopefully, if you have family and friends down there, they've gotten out and they've got to safety. We're going to start right off. This is great. We got a call. David's got a call about Equifax and hack and freezing credit. Are you there, David?
I am. And the question is, you've heard the news stories, I'm sure. What do we do to protect ourselves?
Well, there's a website Equifax has got set up, and you can go to that website to find out if your information has gotten sent out. I've been saying for years on this show, and they're not a sponsor. They don't pay me any money to say this, but I've had my own LifeLock, and I've had that for years, and I can tell you it's saved me numerous times because I've been hit. And I think any of us who have a credit card or any of us who travel, if you're traveling, you're going in restaurants, airports, that is a perfect place where these people steal your ID at. And so Equifax, where this information gets out.
What's the website?
You know, I don't know. I didn't write it down. I think it's just you can go to Equifax.com. And on that site, they have you can go in there and find out if you were one that was hacked.
I did that yesterday. Hopped on there, and they ask for your last name and the last six digits of your Social Security number. Possibly they're mining to try to get more data. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. And it'll let you know whether your data was one of the 100-some-odd million.
Were you tapped?
I am a potential problem, yeah. And it wouldn't. And to sign up for their theft protection program, they have a date on which you sign up for that, and mine's not for another 5 or 6 days, so hopefully during that time nothing happens.
I heard that there was a 1-year fraud protection thing, but that they made you sign a kind of a waiver thing and an arbitration clause.
Oh, interesting.
Just give your give
so,
just
so in other words, you couldn't be part of the class action.
Well, right. Not only that, but you'd have to have it arbitrated.
Is that called CYA covering your assets?
Big time. Big time. Yeah. So if you have to, you know how usually you click the agreements without thinking?
Right.
Don't do it for that one.
Interesting. Good point.
Well, I got to tell you, the thing that bothered me, it bothered me that they did not disclose this earlier. That really upset me. But I'll tell you what upset me a lot more. Three top executives picked up an additional almost 35% of stock value by selling their stock before this got out.
Correct.
Now, to me, insider trading is right there, and I think the feds ought to be in there, and I think somebody ought to be paying their money back and getting heavy fines and maybe going to jail. That kind of crap should not go on.
Chuck, has Arthur Andersen written all over it?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, David. And this kind of stuff, if we're going to have, you talk about a level playing field, big corporate executives should not be allowed to do this kind of crap, because if you or I did it, we would probably be in jail. Martha Stewart went to jail for a lot less than what those bozos did.
Yeah,
she did it for a lousy place setting at Thanksgiving dinner. But
I know. I mean, how many fluff things can you have? but no, David. I think everybody should be concerned. I think everybody should check this out. And what amazes me is that the federal government, if they need to start going after these people, if they can catch them, and when they catch them, it ought to be a guaranteed 25 years in prison. Yeah, no negotiation, no nothing. You steal somebody's identity, you're going to jail for 25 years, and you're going to give total restitution.
So, Kevin, you went on the website, just Equifax.com, or?
I believe it was Equifax. Yeah, I got a email, or I clicked on the link in some article from a major news source, and it took me to Equifax's page, and they had a something to click on there that. You can check to see if you were part of that. And I'm assuming if you had a credit checking issue in the last X number of years, you're in their particular database that got taken. I understand it's not everybody in there.
Well, I just got a text on our site here, and it said that they were told that when they sign up an Equifax notification on their site, when you sign, you can't be part of the class action lawsuit.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yep.
Yeah.
So well, at least they told you.
Yeah, CYA. Yeah. Well, David, that's a great question to start the morning out. And
thank you.
And I think people need to be aware, and your credit is something that you need to protect, like your credit cards or anything else that you have. And certainly with something like this going on, everybody needs protection. Well, you know, I'm going to jump right in here to the markets. And I normally don't do this, but... I got to tell you, if there's ever, and I hate to say this because I don't mean this to be greedy or taking advantage of a situation, but if you're inclined to buy stock by individual companies, I am dead serious about this. With what's happened in this country right now, I think there's a couple companies you ought to take a look at. One is Home Depot, one is Lowe's. These companies are going to explode on the rehabilitation in Texas, rehabilitation in Florida, throughout the Southeast. And these are companies, if you just look at at what's going on in the world, there's going to have to be a lot of rebuilding and a lot of, and where are they going to get the building supplies? Just think about it. Just think, any related industry that you can buy stock in that can help rehabilitate, rebuild the Southeast and the Southwest, I'm telling you, those stocks are going to do really well over the next 3 to 5 years.
How about Raytheon? What do you think about them?
Raytheon?
Yeah, they make the Patriot missiles.
Well, yeah. I don't really... missiles are something I hope they get to stay in the silos, you know? And I don't think anybody, you know, Carl and I both were in the military. I think anybody who's ever served in the military, the last thing you ever want is a conflict. You ever want to have to be having your guys trying to kill other guys. That's not what you want to have happen. And I think there's a lot. But again, going back to defensive stocks, I don't disagree with that at all. I think buying some stocks right now that are into defense or offense is also an excellent buy right now, because we're going to have to rebuild our military. We need to get back up to strength. We're at a 40-year low in our military strength, and we've got to build it back up, and we got to build it back up in a hurry. So, yeah, a lot of those companies are going to make money. So if you're the kind of person who likes to dabble in stock, there's an old story. It's called buy low, sell high. Most people I talk to and most people I sit down and talk to, they have this strange habit of buying high and selling low. So
don't talk about my personal financial affairs on the air.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I shouldn't have said that. We'll save that for another time.
Okay.
But keeps very accurate track of his
I know.
Of my losses.
He gives a bean counter. Yeah, he's got all the numbers, because when you get those tax losses, you got to take them, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're here to have fun in the morning, wake you up. And we like to say we infuse that cup of coffee you're having and get you going in the morning. And this is your opportunity to pick up the phone, give us a call, ask a question, because there is no foolish question when it comes to your money, your estate planning, or your tax bill. Even if you write off tax losses, there's no foolish question when it comes to that. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments, and you're listening to Investing Simplified on the Investing Simplified Radio Network. And if you're a podcast listener listening to us at investingsimplifiedradio.com, you can ask a question right on that site, and we can answer it here on the air if you're too shy to call in. Otherwise, pick up the phone, 503-417-9595, toll free, 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with Carl's comments.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepson.
All right. Send lawyers, guns, well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. And I'm Carl Jepson, and it is time for my comments. And I'm going to look at some of the things that are really basics. I've had a number of people say, you know, why don't you go back and kind of start over and go through some of the basics again, you know, because they kind of like to hear them a second time or third time or whatever. So I'm going to talk about the differences between wills and living trusts today. Just the differences, not the similarities. I'm just going to talk about the differences. So I'm going to talk about some of the important ones. Number one is trusts use more paper, just bigger. Trusts cure insomnia. You know, we were talking about, you know, we hope that you'll get you out of your insomnia. Well, This is one way to get out of insomnia and to sleep if you just have your trust.
I thought they helped you go to sleep.
That's what I mean. They help you go to sleep.
You go right to sleep.
I tell my clients that if they ever get insomnia, just pull out the, you know, the trust and start reading. That'll be good.
So you're saying wills are more interesting? And
well, no, just well, wills are just shorter.
Oh,
you know, the trust has got more pages.
They're just as boring. Okay.
Yeah, and finally, trusts often come with a really cool notebook with tabs in it. It's pretty good. Yeah.
A will doesn't need tabs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But honestly, the number one reason that distinguishes a living trust from a will is that in general, a living trust will abrogate the need for going to probate, and it'll avoid probate for your heirs. And that's really one of the number one things that it does. Whereas a living trust, avoids the probate, the will does not. That's a very common misconception, is that if I have a will, I don't have to go to probate. A will doesn't even, you know, get to do anything until it goes into probate. So that's probably the number one big difference. Other than that, they kind of do some of the same things. A will disposes of your property according to your instructions in the your property in the probate. And the difference with the trust is that the trust disposes of your property without a probate. So, and as I just mentioned, a will doesn't really come into effect until you die. And so that's kind of feels a little bit late sometimes. However, the living trust can be utilized during your lifetime. It comes into effect when it's created. And that's why they call them a living trust. Sometimes they refer to it as an inter vivos trust, which I think means living trust. And so anyway, that's some of the kind of obvious differences. One of the things about a will is that it doesn't really do anything during your lifetime. It just sits there waiting for you to die. Whereas the living trust can provide some management tools and a seamless transition into managing your trust assets by your successor trustee in the event that you become incapacitated. And some people say, well, I got a durable power of attorney. And usually we recommend having both because they kind of do things a little bit differently. But the trust is much simpler to get financial institutions to honor because I think it's more of a troublesome thing to, you know, you just don't go down to the bookstore and get a living trust. Well, you can, I guess. But, you know, there again, you can also, you can buy a book on how to rebuild a transmission, but, you know, you probably don't want to do that.
Well, Carl, we got a caller on the line, Francisco, and this is right down your alley and actually takes Kevin too. Francisco has a question about skipping generation trusts.
Ooh.
Francisco, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a ranch. And I want to do it like a dynasty trust down the road. So I had a 3 or 4 generation. At the end of that 4th generation, they'll pay the liability of the taxes.
The multiple generations could be really challenging for a couple of reasons. But let's just kind of look at what we're talking about here. Generation skipping tax has to do with a tax that is, first of all, you have to have a substantial amount of money that's going to go to those people. A lot of times, ordinarily we would describe people as that would be utilizing this kind of a trust as a grandchild. That's the second generation, and so a lot of times they don't come into play. But when they do, then it looks at how much money they have coming to them, and if they're over a certain amount, and I'm forgetting the numbers on it, but it's the same as the gift tax
lifetime
stuff.
Gift.
Yeah,
exemption.
So it's about $5.5 million.
Yeah, it comes out of the $5.4 million. So as a practical matter, only those people who have a huge amount of stuff really need to worry about it too much. But many of the trusts you'll see have a provision that says that the trustee can allocate amongst the certain amounts to the generation skipping portion of it if they want to
stay under the tax.
Yeah. So
normally you're going to be paying your estate is going to be paying estate tax as each generation dies. If you want to skip one of those generations, then there is a separate calculation that is called the generation skipping tax, and it's its own exemption amount of 5 point whatever it's going to be, or 10 million if you're married. And so if, you know, it's a pretty complex planning. If you're not over those amounts, you're probably fine. You probably want to look at just putting a normal estate plan in place for an estate over $1 million. Unless you're way over that, then you would definitely be looking at the alternative methods.
And aren't you limited as to how many? I thought it was like you could go, I didn't think you'd go like three or four. Can't you just go one and then it's got to be redone?
Well, it sounds to me like the main purpose is and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like you just want to make sure your ranch stays in the family for three or four or five generations. Is that correct?
You're right. You're quite right.
Okay.
Yes.
Here's a problem with that that really has nothing to do with taxes. And this is, you know, every lawyer in town is going to laugh when I say this because this raises an issue that they call the rule against perpetuities. That's a mouthful. That's you know, that
it sounds like a legal word.
It's a legal word.
Yeah.
And what it has to do with is that way back in feudal England, when most of our laws were created, the royalty had all the land, and you know, your stature as a royal person was really defined by your lands. And so they devised a number of ways of preserving those properties and passing them on to their family members forever. And you know, the commoners kind of thought that was really unfair. And so anyway, they ultimately passed this thing called the Rule Against Perpetuities, which essentially limits how far you can hold the property, or you could control the property in one way, you know, like out of one instrument or one deed or one trust or whatever it is. And every state in the country has some form of a rule against perpetuities. And if you've got about 3 or 4 hours, I might be able to explain it to you. But it's kind of complicated. But generally, what happens is if this could conceivably transfer property to someone who is not yet born, or to someone who is not yet born and it's 21 years later, that is the kind of thing that can result in the thing being void for, you know, the gift that goes beyond that could be a voided gift. I have never seen one of those. I have never been involved with a court case in one of those.
I haven't either.
It's so rare that it just usually doesn't happen, because more often than not, people transfer their assets to people, you know, usually within the second generation. So but the people, the second generation could turn around if it's their desire, they could turn around and you know, transfer the property to a fourth generation, I guess, and still be okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of what they call, in this country, there's a lot of things called land grab, where multi-sovereign countries are buying farmland or ranches. So it's creating a lot of appreciation of these farmland. And I read some of the articles about multi-generation trusts, mm-hmm. the Rothschild and all these generations. You know, the names of family are able to keep their wealth in a trust for multi-generations.
Yeah, you exactly right. And that's, I mean, when you pass away, you could have your assets go into something called like a dynasty trust or...
Right, that's what I meant, dynasty trust.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, there's definitely a place for putting something like that in place. And but I that's going to be... very specific planning, looking at exactly what your assets are and seeing if that is worth it. There's a huge amount of cost and administration, I would say.
I understand that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you look into land grab in this country, there's a lot of foreign countries that are buying farmland in this country, mm-hmm. creating a gold mine to farmland. Case in point, Seattle, Washington, the biggest gold rush is farmland. I'm in Washington, and humongous of appreciation of farmland and prices going up in farmland.
Well, there's one thing that, as far as purchasing land and things like that, farmland, there are a lot of Midwestern states, middle of the country type states, I think particularly of North Dakota, where they have laws that you, that almost make it impossible for big corporations to buy land.
You're quite right.
And they so they basically want to ensure that it stays as a family farm. And that brings up all sorts of other issues, but I think that they're you know, I think that the legislators and things in you know, states that have lots of farmland are quite mindful of that and are trying to do things to conserve, but there's quite a tension between, you know, big business and, you know, and little farmer guy. You know, I mean,
no, I agree.
Yeah.
I just want to maintain that I don't want my kids to be the steward of my farmland or ranch just because I work hard for it and I want to make sure.
Well, I think if you can instill that in them, then they will be able to, as each generation passes, to they'll be able to do that. They'll be, I mean, they can. Yeah,
I made sure my kids were informed or apprised for it, and they have to be on board. You know, they're all educated with a graduate degree, but at the same time, I made sure that their graduate degree I utilized for cash flow to expand my farmland. I don't want this farmland just to be stagnant. I want my kids to expand it. That's what I meant to say. Mm-hmm.
I think you're on the right track. I would definitely, over the course of, you know, the next year, or couple years, keep looking into this, talk with some professionals. If you get something's put in place, I think you could have the legal side along with the understanding with your kids and really have a good plan.
Thank you, Kevin. You're having a great day.
You know, Kevin, that brings up a point because if Trump does one of the things he said he was going to do is get rid of the federal estate tax, that's going to eliminate a lot of this kind of planning to be done. You're not going to have to do it.
That'll help the tax side. Yep. I think Francisco's side is going to be the legal side of how to keep this in the family. And that's, you know, definitely a different issue.
Well, and that's become, I see it most often, not on family farms so much, because I think that they often are really wedded to the notion of keeping it in the family. But, and they don't typically think as far ahead as he did, like four generations down. But I usually see it in with the beach house or the mountain cabin or the, you know, the recreational property. And usually what they want to do is they want to keep it in the family, but they don't want to totally tie the hands of their kids. And we've done a number of things like requiring, you know, where you have numbers of kids and one of them really needs cash and they want out, that they can get to have kind of a mandatory buyout sort of thing, but with good terms. And so that it allows them at least to get out if they want to, or unless they meet certain circumstances, they can't, you know. So you can do that. Now, that can't go on. You know, there again, you can't go on forever, but this kind of a restriction can be applied and works. You know, it usually works pretty well.
So. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. So if you've got a question you want to ask, call 503-417-9595, toll free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with the tax investigator.
This is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we've had some couple good calls. We do welcome additional calls, 503-417-9595. And today on the Tax Investigator, we're going to look at a pretty in-depth topic, and we're going to try to keep it light. I am certainly no expert in this, but we'll take
our
call.
Okay, so Jack's got a question about any optimism in the Trump tax plan. Are you there, Jack? I hope that's not Jack in the Box.
I've been listening for a couple of months. It's really pretty terrific. I've called a couple of times. You might recognize me as a guy who just can't stand rhinos and deep staters and swamp dwellers. And my concern is that they have successfully put themselves in a position, I think, to block a once-in-a-generation opportunity for real tax reform in this country, which we desperately need. I'm a retired CPA. There are a zillion ways that the tax code can be improved, but they've blocked him. And if he has to align with Pelosi and Schumer to get anything done, which is beginning to look likely, nothing that alliance gets done is going to appeal to me. So what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I can tell you, I'm certainly in the same camp you are, and it just galls me that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have been procrastinating to the nth degree on getting anything done, and I think the best thing the Republican Party could do is to get rid of both those guys.
Yeah,
they need to get rid of them immediately, and also we voters out here. Now we have a tough time voting here because basically Multnomah County is 85% Democratic and vote that way, and the state pretty much goes the way of Multnomah County and Salem. And so when you got those two big areas that are so dominant in one area, they're going to constantly send the same people to office. Ron Wyden, who's done virtually nothing that I can see that's helped us except raise taxes and create more debt. Something's got to get done. And here's the problem. From a mathematical standpoint, you were a CPA. We just can't continue having this gloat of federal government debt. We're going to be over $20 trillion, and with these natural disasters, we're going to be pushing way past that.
Yep.
And at some point, I don't care who you are, if you're spending more than you have, it's called bankruptcy. It's called financial disaster. And the next big disaster we could have is the financial disaster. And something's got to get done. And I'm not real optimistic right now that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan can pull it off and get anything done.
Okay, well, I was hoping you'd boost my spirit, but
yeah.
You haven't.
Well, what do you think? Do you think they can get it done?
Not as long as those two are in office. And McCain and Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins are enemy number 1, 2, and 3. They stymied the reform of Obamacare. Everything that those people have run on and promised for years, once they're actually in a position where there's a president that might sign the legislation that they've all been promising to give us, they block it. That is unconscionable.
Yeah, I got to tell you, one of the most disappointing things to me was, and I don't know if you saw when they did the vote on Obamacare, and of course John McCain was the guy that did the deciding vote, but Orrin Hatch, who's supposed to be a conservative Republican, went up and hugged him afterwards.
Yeah, I heard that.
That guy is every bit as bad as John McCain. He's
yeah.
a hypocrite. He totally lied to the people who voted him in there. And I know we don't go to Utah, but maybe some of those people are listening online, but I'd be getting that guy out of office.
Okay, well, I'll wrap up by saying, repeating that I really like everything about the program except for one thing. I loved Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, but your bumper music, which isn't them, but it's somewhat similar, that's the only thing about the program that I would change.
I have to tell you, it's interesting that you said that, because I was talking about this yesterday to somebody, and actually the guy who plays that bumper music was the backup for Herb Alpert.
Oh, really?
And he actually was in their band, and he would stand in for Herb sometimes. And he actually listened to our song, and he actually listened to it, and then he said, let me run my pipes through here. And he actually just did that off the cuff. And so I am forever thankful for him to help us put that together. And these guys usually do Christian music. I was at a studio where they usually do Christian music, and they do Christian jingles and stuff. And they actually put that together. They actually did that through a friend of mine who said, hey, I got this idea for a song for your show. And they came up with it, and I thought the guy was terrific. And I thought the horn, I mean, everybody's different. I kind of like it, but some people don't. And, you know, you're about the second or third person who's told me they didn't. So the majority of people I've talked to like it. And the one thing about it is you remember it. And that's the
true.
Whole idea. We want you to remember it because you remember Price Finance Group Wealth Management. So it works. It works.
All right. Good luck,
hey,
guys.
Thanks, Jack. We've got another call, Lincoln, selling property. Again, right down Kevin's bailiwick. Are you there, Lincoln?
I am.
Okay, and your question?
Excellent. I am going to be selling a property, and I'm going to be paying the most taxes that I've ever paid in my life on this property. I'm doing a lot of the work myself, and I've heard that there's a way that I can write down all of the hours that I've worked to get some tax relief from that. Is that correct?
Nope.
Not even if it's for like work. So if I'm acting as a general contractor and doing work that I would be having a general contractor do,
then you have
all
just
of the hours that I put onto it.
Then you have just transferred capital gain into ordinary income. You have to report that as income on your personal side.
Capital gain is better.
Yep.
Much better.
All right, so capital gain is much better?
Absolutely.
Yep. That's a lot less.
Yeah, and possibly subject to, you know, it's, you know, I mean, that's the same thing with a shareholder and their corporations and doing work for related parties and stuff. You really want to look at the whole tax picture, look at what sort of gain you're looking at in the property, what's your personal tax picture, what entity is going to be recognizing this, and then determine what's the best place. But capital gain's pretty doggone good. I can't think of much of a way, but you know, you might have someone just take a brief look.
Is that including even if the house is owned by me? So I'm living in the house right now, so it's my personal residence.
Okay.
So if I'm improving my personal residence, doesn't that count for something?
No, not at all, because if you are excluding the gain due to the personal residence exclusion, there's no deduction against something that's not taxable. So
let me just add one thing here, and I think one of the things that we're kind of mixing together is the capital that you put in to remodel your home and fix it up, and the cost of the goods and services are part of your cost basis in building that house. But when you're also the contractor, you got to make a choice whether you're going to take income or capital gain. Kevin's exactly right.
Here's the down and dirty. Are you married?
I am.
Okay. Have you owned it for 2 out of 5 years?
Nope. I've owned it for less than 3 months.
Okay. So you're going to have potentially some what sort of gain are you looking at?
I think that my tax burden will be about $112,000.
So what sort of gain would that be? Are you looking at about a $400,000 gain?
Yep, approximately.
Okay. So the longer you hold it, and if there is an unforeseen circumstance, which just about can be anything, you can potentially exclude a chunk of this. And then, yes, you're going to want to keep track of your basis, get that gain as low as you can. I would say you'd probably want to have somebody who knows what they're doing in this area take a look and at least get some of the gain excluded under the personal residence exclusion, and then the rest of it taxed as capital gain would be your best plan of attack.
But he's going to have to live there a little longer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to get enough money to start a new business, so I kind of need to go fast.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Very good.
Kevin, if he's only been there 3 months,
you can still get a prorated exclusion of the $500,000.
Okay, you can.
Yeah, but it has to be for an unforeseen circumstance, and that would be health, job, crime in the neighborhood.
In this case, he's doing it for an investment.
But that's probably a foreseen circumstance in terms of, hey, I want my money. So you can typically come up with something that's acceptable. They've made this unforeseen circumstance proration pretty easy to attain, but it still has to be reasonable. So, yeah. So good question. And frankly, a little bit of a few more months or...
There's in Seattle, the average home in the last 12 months went up over $100,000.
Yeah.
So you can pick up a gain pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, very, very good investment there. So, I wanted to...
I want to hear about the other thing.
Yes. Well, let's go to our next break, and then we will jump into blockchain, a little bit of description of what it is, and I'll try to keep it short so we can get to the Knowledge Trust.
Okay, we're going to be right back with the Knowledge Trust and the Tax Investigator.
Do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Paging Dr. Price. Paging Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
All right, well, let's get right back into it. So we're talking about bitcoins and more specifically cryptocurrencies and even more specifically the accounting underlying cryptocurrencies and how that works and why it's important and frankly how I think it's going to change the economic game in the future. And I know there's some very good folk who probably think this is just a fad, but this is a pretty significant development, I'd say, in the last 5-10 years that could really change the game, kind of like how the internet has changed things, kind of like how the cloud, a subset of the internet, has really changed how things are done. So what is blockchain technology? Well, basically, it is a type of, and we're going to just look specifically of how it affects the accounting. It can be, the theory can be applied to just a huge number of any database, frankly. But for accounting, it's basically what they call it's going to be a distributed ledger. Well, what does that mean? Well, I'll describe it as let's go back to a basic accounting principle. Say you have the account of cash. Well, cash has a big problem to it. It has a way of making feet and wings and walking off. And so if you – yes, indeed – I'm getting the look here. So if you have one person who's in charge of collecting cash, recording it, depositing it, spending it, and reconciling the account, there's a high likelihood that there's a high level of risk there for misappropriation of
cash. Do you mean somebody would actually take cash in and say, well, I'll take this cash and take 20% off and only report 80% of it?
That's exactly right.
That could happen.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly right. But if you apply this principle of segregation of duties, basically one person collects the cash and is in charge of maintaining custody of the cash. Another person is in charge of the record keeping of it and the reconciliation. And maybe even a third person is in charge of being able to, they're the only the person who can spend it. Now you've got three different people as a part of the accounting of this account that you have to have collusion among all three to have something happen to that cash. And so there's a lot less likelihood of a problem with the accounting on that account. And so basically with blockchain technology, it's a distributed ledger. Instead of just one person going to the IRS and saying, hey, I had $1 million of deductions here, there's only one side of it. And the IRS is going to say, well, let's take a look at your receipts. And if you can provide, say, a third party that says, hey, here's your canceled checks, here's all your deductions, it's good, the IRS is going to be fine. And if you don't have it, they're going to say, you're going to need Carl on your side then, or more than that. So, but the distributed ledger basically in blockchain technology basically has a set of rules. Everybody has a part of this account, or in this case for Bitcoin, a algorithm or what have you, a part of the currency that says, yes, my transaction's based on that guy who's based on that guy, and it all ties together, and they all have a set of rules that if you have a part of this ledger, you have to follow those rules. And if you don't, everybody else in the network, if you will, is going to be able to finger you as a fraud. No, this transaction is invalid. And so that's it. So blockchain technology is going to provide a huge level of veracity and true, and there's all sorts of implications and applications of this, but it's really a kind of a growing way to have an accounting system under these cryptocurrencies that's very very accurate. And this is probably going to be the wave of the future for, you know, we're going to have online commerce, you're going to have cloud computing, and now the currency that is going to be basically you won't need cash, you'll be able to use this, an online currency, basically. Now, having the government get behind it, there's even talk that the U.S. government or governments may create their own cryptocurrency, which would be an interesting thing. And you could see how we could go to a cashless society. And they're applying this to a very broad number of ways. And some right now, it's a fad, but it's very interesting. And for those who understand what it means of having a cashless economic system, of not being able to buy or sell outside of using this system, this is pretty significant. It's highly accurate, extremely efficient. And so it's a pretty interesting wave of the future. Now, how does this, in terms of tax perspective, you know, you look at what's the IRS doing? Well, they've caught wind of this, and you remember the old UBS accounts, the Swiss bank accounts, this hidden transactions that are off of the radar. Well, the IRS finally got around to being able to put pressure and finding out who's involved in those transactions. Well, Bitcoin is similar. Of the millions of transactions that have happened, I believe in a recent year, only 800 were ever reported on tax returns, 802 to be exact. So the IRS is very interested in this. They are using software, and they're putting pressure on the companies that host these databases to find out who's doing these things. And so anyway, there's going to be some repercussions down the line if you're dealing in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies and you're not properly accounting for it, especially as property. So
methinks there is much room for mischief.
There is much room for mischief. And that is the tax investigator for today.
Wow. I think Bitcoin, if it gets too successful, the government will just squash it.
Yeah, or join the party. Kind of like marijuana.
I don't know. I don't think they're going to join the party.
They'll have a Bitcoin monopoly.
Yeah. Only if they can rake gains off the top like they're doing with marijuana, you know. If they can make a lot of money, then sure.
Why is it all the vices? Marijuana, gambling, alcohol. If you couldn't control it, well, the state takes it over
and taxes it
and joins the party.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, in this case, Carl says litigate and prosper. They say tax and prosper.
That's right.
You know, so that, same thing.
That's right.
Well, listen, to shake up a little bit of the difference here, this is one of the things I do want to make sure you do understand. I'm going to be having a guest on come on the show here in the next month or so, a gentleman by the name of David Royer, who is America's favorite IRA expert.
Oh, excellent.
And David has a book out that I've helped endorse with him, and it's called Top 10 IRA Mistakes, How to Avoid IRA Tax Traps. And I'm going to say if you are 10 to 15 years from retirement or you're in retirement, this is a book you ought to have. And if you want to pick up a copy from me, I'll give you a copy. It's a great read. I'll be glad to give you a copy, provided you read the book. If you're not going to read it, don't pick up one from me, because if I give you one, I'm going to call you and ask if you read it. And I hope you'll read it, because it has saved clients of mine thousands of dollars, and it has also saved them peace of mind knowing they have things set up properly so their beneficiaries can stretch their IRAs when they pass away. And take them in the most advantageous tax advantage for the family members. And that is really the important part of this whole thing. If you're going to do planning, you want the planning to work. And unfortunately, Carl, you and I have seen planning that doesn't work. And this is just another way of saying, hey, here's another way that you can do some planning and actually make your dollars go farther in your estate plan. So it's a great read, and I'll give you a free copy if you want one. If you come by my office and ask for a copy, I'll give it to you. You don't have to schedule an appointment with me. The only thing you have to do is read the book. If you read it, I'll be happy. Hey, guys, a lot's going on in the world with, you know, I'm looking at a TV screen here that's showing this massive hurricane hitting Florida. And I got to tell you, with everything going on, we just got to do a lot of praying for all the people that are in that. And also, you know, we have it right here in our own area. I know, Carl, you were talking about somebody you know is in a zone where they may have in the Corbett area, where they may have to leave and leave their home and belongings and everything behind and get out of there.
All packed up, they are.
Yeah, it's really scary, and you know, our prayers and thoughts go out to those people here locally and throughout the country. And Kevin, how somebody get a hold of you?
We are at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569.
Carl?
I'm at 971-229-0585, and Carl at carljepsonlaw.com.
And you get a hold of me at pfgwm.com or 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. And we're located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103 in Portland, Oregon, 97216. And have a great week and be safe out there and avoid those fire traps if you can.
Listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management, Incorporated.
We do Investing Simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then, make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do Investing Simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.